Hey friends, it's me again. You know what's really easy to do and even easier to forget? Help me out and hit that like button if you're listening on YouTube. If you're listening somewhere else, what the hell? Pop in and give me a thumb. Say hi while you're at it. Helps me a ton with that damn algorithm. And besides, it's always nice to see you there. All right then, let's hop on that crazy train.
All aboard!
Happy Halloween, friend. Come on in. Check this out. I've got like 5 pillowcases full of candy here. Help yourself. Good job, boy. Hey, here's a pro tip for everyone. Let your gator answer the door on Halloween. The kids leave you candy. Why hadn't I thought of this before? It's genius. Anyway, have a seat, friend. Hey, before we get started, I have to tell you about a new CTFDN promotion we're doing. You ever wanted your very own custom horror story made just for you? We're excited to announce something brand new from Chilling Tales for Dark Nights, a way for fans and supporters to become part of the horror themselves. Introducing Nightmare Machine, a chance to have a one-of-a-kind personalized scary story or video created in your honor. Here's how it works. Choose a tier to support the channel. Tell us a few details about yourself and what you'd like your story to be about. Our team will craft an original horror tale inspired by your ideas, then bring it to life with our signature narration and sound design. No writing skills required. Just tell us what you want and we'll do the rest. To submit, send an email to nightmaremachine@chillintalesfordarknights.com with the subject line, Nightmare Machine Story Request. Include your name, any details you'd like to include, any specific voice actors you'd like to be included. You get the idea. As part of the order process, please make your donation directly through the GoFundMe campaign at helpchillin.org, the new fundraiser supporting the continued production of new horror content. All right, so tonight we welcome Red Bad Andy, winner of the Drew Blood's Dark Tales Spooky Season 2025 Writing Contest. This is the story of a man chasing his memories, or are his memories chasing him? So without further delay, from award-winning author Red Bad Andy, I give you Precious Memories. Memories are a funny thing. They are so important in determining what defines us in our history, yet they trap us in cycles that can be difficult to escape. I've always had a hard time reconciling how my past defines me. I still cling to the memories and even the objects connected to them. Some people call me a hoarder. I would say I'm just sentimental. Sentimental for a time that has passed and for those I shared that time with. I suppose it doesn't matter now. No matter what I do or where I go, the ones I cared for most are gone. And all I have left are the things that remind me of them. Just the other day, I bumped into a tall brass crane that my wife had picked up years ago at an antique store. She always liked those kinds of decorations, and dozens of them are still around the house. I smiled when I thought of her shopping for antiques. She had always enjoyed going to those kinds of stores. She said she loved to experience the history of things, to speculate on the stories and memories that even the most benign objects might possess. Many of the items I cling to are things she brought into our house, breathed her life and her own memories into. I know a lot of these things hold little real value, but to me, it's all I have left of the life I once had. You truly never appreciate what you have until it's gone. I'm getting nostalgic again. I suppose it's better if I just tell you the tale and the reason why I live alone here now, trapped in a mountain of memories and unable to move on. It was 5 years ago, nearly to the day. My wife Susan and I were going on a holiday for the weekend, something we had not done in some time. We would be staying at a nice little coastal town, about 50 miles away from where we lived. It was beautiful out there in the summertime, and we were both excited to finally be taking some time off. We had been through a lot the previous year, and our hearts and bodies needed the break. I was finishing up a last-minute delivery that Friday. Susan was disappointed I would not be driving with her to our destination, but she decided to go on and claim our reservation and look around while waiting for me. I was frustrated that I had been delayed. However, the last-minute delivery that was called in by the owner was not something I could really decline. So there I was, stuck making a delivery that was a good half a state away while my wife was waiting for me. I groaned as I checked the clock again and realized that even if I made good time, I would not be rejoining Susan until evening. Maybe not even until later at night. Worse still, the forecast for the area had gone from clear skies to a rather disturbing-looking storm front that threatened to make my trip even worse. I made my delivery and dropped off the truck as fast as I could. Then I left and headed straight for Echo Cove in my own car. It was raining cats and dogs, and I could barely see anything through the storm. A bit of rain was not unusual out there, but it seemed particularly bad, and I hoped Susan had been able to check into the hotel and stay out of the downpour. It was not our first time staying there. We had vacationed at Echo Cove for years at that point. Despite the bad weather, we needed to do it. We had been in a rocky patch in our relationship after last year, and the tragedy we endured together nearly broke us. I had tried to discourage the idea, but when I heard the desperation in her voice, I knew she was right, and that we had to try to put things back to some semblance of normal, but it still felt hard to enjoy ourselves like we had done before. It just felt different, more somber. Though if anything could help, it would be a getaway where we could just be together, away from everything else. A little time just for us, to remember our love, our memories, and even our grief. Thinking about her made me feel even more guilty for working late on the start of our vacation. Over the last year, I had thrown myself into work. I found I was able to cope with things better the busier I stayed. Well, perhaps not cope, but I found I could not dwell on things when I was distracted. Unfortunately, being away so often had likely contributed to the rift our marriage was suffering in the last year. As my mind wandered, I nearly missed what looked like some object in the road. I swerved to avoid it and was lucky I had not ended up in a ditch. I knew I had to stay focused on what I was doing, or I was going to get into an accident. Another half hour of white-knuckled driving through torrents of rain, and I made out the outline of the town by the faint lights beyond. I had gone past some spotty sections of cell reception, and I noticed I had a message from Susan. I replayed it on the car's Bluetooth and heard my wife's voice.
Hi, honey. Just calling to make sure you're safe. This weather is insane. I swear it was supposed to be clear this weekend. Anyway, I wanted to let you know I'm going to be checking out a new antique store before heading to the hotel. I saw it on the way in. It's called Precious Memories. It looks super charming. I'll let you know if I find anything. I should be back at the hotel by the time you get here. See you soon, and thank you again for doing this. I know it feels too soon, but I think we need this.
I smiled despite myself, knowing how even in a massive thunderstorm she would still want to check out an antique store if it was available. I tried to call her back after listening to the message, and it rang several times before going to voicemail. I left a quick message apologizing for missing her call and letting her know I was okay. I figured since I was running even later than I was expected due to the weather, that she would be at the hotel by then. I drove straight there first. It was a nice little place near the beach called the Tides Inn. We had stayed there a few years back and decided to go again this year. The place looked empty, despite how busy summer was for them. I was able to find a spot close to the office and park. I rushed through the pouring rain and into the office. I realized I still needed to see what our room number was. I had forgotten to ask Susan, and she had not responded when I tried to call her. Stepping inside, the familiar sight of the lobby greeted me, and I was happy to be back. I remember the last time we had come. It was a few years ago, but the memory still made me smile, just like the cheesy boat decorations all over. I rang the bell on the counter, and in moments, a pretty young woman whose name tag said Chloe stepped up to greet me.
Hello, sir. Checking in?
No, my wife should have already picked up the key. Mrs. Susan Bayer? She smiled and tapped a bit on her keyboard before a slight frown creased her face.
I'm sorry, sir. It looks like your check-in time was a few hours ago. I have your key right here. No one else has been by to pick it up.
She handed me the key and gave an apologetic look. I took it, finished checking in, and thanked her. I was a bit confused. I pulled out my phone and saw I had some reception and called Susan again. It went straight to her voicemail. I was starting to get worried. She should have been there already. After a few moments of cycling through what-if scenarios, I managed to calm myself down. I had an idea just then. Maybe she was still at that antique store. If anyone could spend hours looking at antiques, it would be her. I asked back in the hotel for directions to the Precious Memories antique store. The woman looked confused.
I'm sorry. I'm not familiar with that shop. Though new places pop up all the time. Did your wife say where it was?
I shook my head, but just then I noticed I had missed a response. It was a text from her number. No explanation, no other words besides an address. 667 Bay Drive. I tried to send a response, but the signal bar of service I had was gone. I asked Chloe if she knew where Bay Drive was, and she directed me to the location.
Yeah, it's close to the entrance to town, about 10 minutes north of here. Sounds like it might be near where the old strip mall was. A lot of businesses used to use the space, at least before everyone closed shop. I had not heard another business was open there already. Good luck, and drive safe.
She smiled and waved goodbye, and I reciprocated and thanked her again for the help. Then I pulled up my coat and stepped back into the pouring rain. It did take about 10 minutes to get to Bay Drive, another 5 to find the specific location. The area was further away from a lot of the other businesses. I wasn't surprised that many people had not heard of it since its opening. The address was a large lot that looked like it had housed several businesses. I nearly left when I had not seen anything that looked open. But when I checked the other side of the building, I saw it. It looked like someone had taken a small wooden cottage and dropped it into a strip mall on top of some other shuttered store. The contrast between the homey facade of the quaint shop and the shuttered stores nearby was jarring. I parked in the rundown lot that was connected to the small store and was encouraged by the fact that it was the only window that had a light on inside. When I parked and stepped out of my car, I knew it was the right place. As I moved closer, I saw a swinging wooden sign that indicated I was standing in front of Precious Memories. I squinted at the smaller message below the title stating, "To every memory a spirit, and to every spirit a purpose." I was surprised when it seemed like the area around my car, and more particularly the store, was barely raining. It looked like somehow I was at the eye of a great storm. The effect was eerie, but I was relieved when I saw my wife's car in the lot as well. No one was inside, so I figured she must still be in the store. I rushed to the door and felt an odd sensation, like I was remembering and forgetting something important in just the span of a few seconds. I brushed off the strange feeling and went inside. The place looked larger on the inside, and I stopped for a moment and rubbed my eyes to ensure I was seeing what I was seeing. It looked like an entire shopping mall had been stuffed into the little building. As incredible as the sight was, I brushed it off and walked in. I started looking around for my wife, or at least someone who had seen her. It was very quiet, and no other customers appeared to be around. No staff either. No one had been by the front door or the checkout, so I moved further inside, hoping to see someone. As I walked through the store, the floorboards creaked, and the ambience of the place felt truly ancient. If this place had not been an antique store before, it had seemed destined to become one. It felt like stepping out of time. I did find myself admiring a variety of different items as I walked. The shop had a myriad of sections, all complete with large inventories of antiques of various eras. Each one of them had an aura about them, like the items were begging to share their stories, their memories. I was impressed with the sheer volume of antiques and understood how my wife, a connoisseur, could lose track of time walking the shelves. I pressed on for a few minutes, surprised by the silence and utter lack of anyone. I felt like they were closed, but they couldn't be. The door was still open, the lights were still on, and Susan was still here somewhere. I was growing concerned that I had not found anyone yet, so I called out,
"Susan? It's me. Where are you?"
First at a normal volume. Then when I realized no other customers were likely there to offend, I shouted,
"Susan, are you here?"
I thought I heard movement from somewhere in the store, but the echo and silence was the most pervasive presence of all. Then I was startled when a hand touched my shoulder. I whirled around and saw an older man in horn-rimmed glasses looking back at me, a thin, wiry smile plastered across his ancient face.
"Hello, sir. Are you looking for something or someone?"
I composed myself, embarrassed that I had been startled, and responded,
Yes, my wife. She stopped by to look around earlier, but I can't find her. Her car is still outside. Do you know where she is?"
His smile continued, and I was not sure what to make of his demeanor.
"Oh, yes, I remember her. Things are a bit foggy these days, but I remember every soul who comes to visit us. The name is Bishop, Mark Bishop. Welcome to my little shop. I would be happy to help you find who you are looking for, and anything or anyone else. We have it all here, if you know what you are really looking for."
He chuckled a bit, like he had just said something funny. I felt tense, like it was an inside joke I wasn't getting. He didn't seem fazed by my discomfort and continued,
"Yes, she was just here, looking around, taking in the sights and visiting with the other spirits. We have many precious memories here. Every item has a memory, and every memory has a spirit. You must take some time and find what means something to you. I insist."
He clasped his hands together as a Cheshire grin spread across his face. I was confused by what he meant. I didn't know what other spirits he could be referring to, but I figured he might be a little too into his job and even have a story or a memory for every one of his antiques. I chuckled to myself when I considered that the history lessons might just be a reason to overcharge for everything. He cocked his head as I glowered back at him.
unable to hide my impatience or confusion. He started to laugh.
Only kidding. She was looking around for a gift, I believe. But she found something important. Or was it someone?
He chuckled again, and I did not like the way he lingered on the last word. I was getting suspicious and frustrated. I was starting to think this creepy store owner had done something to her. I didn't want to throw around accusations just yet, but I was growing more disturbed by the moment.
Okay then, well, what I need is to find her now. We're running late as it is. I don't know my way around here. Could you show me where she is? I'm sure she'll want to buy a thing or two, but then we need to go.
His smile finally broke and he looked dejected.
Oh, well, I suppose I can. But I think you should reconsider looking around a bit yourself. You might find something you never knew you needed. Or someone you are trying to forget.
The disturbing cackle grated against my mind, but I followed the wizened old man through the store trying to find where Susan was. The whole situation felt off, and I found myself getting ready for some trick or trap that the creepy owner might pull on me while leading me further into the store. We approached a small hall that broke off into different directions. We moved to a door at the end of the hallway on the right. He held out a hand, ushering me forward.
I believe she was in the Victorian section last I saw. Please, after you.
He held open the door and I felt nervous, but walked in the room despite my paranoia. I heard a voice call out from behind me. It had almost sounded like Susan gasping, like she had just been surprised by something. I instinctively turned and called out to her.
Susan?
Bishop smiled again and muttered something below his breath.
There, I think she found who she was looking for. Maybe you will too. I hope you do. It would be a shame if you ended up like the others. Not for us, but for you.
Then everything went dark. I panicked at first, shouting out and almost tripping over my own feet. It was not just the lights going out, but a powerful sense of vertigo and distortion that knocked me down. I called out to Bishop to see if he had turned out the lights or if it was some trick, but he didn't answer. I stumbled over a small rack of antiques while trying to stand up. It was very dark, but I could see the faint outline of things once a bit of night vision kicked in. Bishop was nowhere to be seen. Suddenly, a whisper called out from the shadows.
Memories are only as real as you make them. Some people can never let go, and if you can't, they will drag you down. Can you let go? Can your wife?
I called out to the voice, but no one responded. I had no idea what the hell was going on, but at that point, I was concerned that Susan had been abducted and that I was next. I had to find her and get out of there. I pulled out my phone and turned on the flashlight. The ray of light seemed oddly thin, and it barely dispersed the Stygian darkness. I figured it was better than nothing, and even though it had no reception, it could at least serve as a light source. I pressed on, trying to find my way back to the door and hopefully a way out. I was confused when, after walking in darkness for a minute, I found myself back in the room I had been led to. The door was to my back, and there was a small pedestal in the center of the room that hadn't been there before. I walked up to it and saw that it held a folded piece of paper. I unfurled the note and shone my light on it. It was a strange poem titled The Price of a Precious Memory. I slowly read the piece with growing unease. Once upon a memory, your life it felt so right. The memory of precious things would cling to you so tight. But life's not fair. Sometimes it takes things so very dear. Dear to your heart, it takes away the ones that you keep near. And with their loss, there comes the pain, a tragedy it seems. Your heart so full of precious things, now sorrow's all that teems. But what if fate could lend a hand and make your dreams come true? The ones you missed that you have lost, the ones that you once knew, can all come back to you, to see them once again. It won't cost much, a memory, an object now and then. If memory won't let you go, if past claims all you feel, then stay with us and find a place that brings you something real. Real memories made manifest is all yours in this deal. The price you pay, well, that's unique, made when the pact is sealed. But please beware the others, their fury is revived. You might be made a memory, an object that survived. So hark to precious memories, the sweetest ones held dear. The things that live inside these halls will soon make them appear. I didn't know what to make of the disturbing poem. That bishop guy had to be the one who wrote it. It kept referring to memories and what they cost. It made sense with the name of the store, but it was a creepy way to deliver a sales pitch. Never mind the fact that he vanished when delivering it. My mind went back to the assumption that he was trying to kidnap my wife and I, and this was some bizarre game. Whatever the case, I was stuck playing it for the time being. I exited the small room and went back down the hall I thought we had come from. When I reached the door, I found it was locked and barred. I had no choice but to move on into the other rooms that were down the hall. I checked my phone again in the vain hope I had a signal to call for help, but there was still no signal. To my surprise, I received a message just then, despite the lack of service. It was from Susan, and I could not believe what she was saying.
He is here. Danny, our baby boy is here. It's a miracle. You need to find us. Hurry.
I was speechless. My wife was telling me that our son Daniel was here, but it was impossible. Our only child had died a year ago in an accident. He couldn't be here, could he? I had to find Susan and see what was happening. I was worried for her mental state and feared she might be seeing things. I had to find her and find some way to get out with her. I walked along the dim halls of the store. I swear I heard hushed whispers all around me, but I could not discern the source. I finally reached another door that I presumed led to a back room or maybe wherever Bishop had run off to. I grabbed a nearby statue to use as a weapon just in case and threw the door open. It creaked open loudly, announcing my presence to whoever or whatever lay beyond. Inside, I found what looked like a dining room straight out of the 1940s. The table, the decor, everything was meticulously designed straight out of time. I wondered if this was some sort of showroom, but as I looked around, I couldn't see any prices on anything. I figured it might still be a work in progress. Moving closer to the table, I paused for a moment. There was a small placard on the table that read, "One Last Family Breakfast." It was odd. There was no price tag on the admittedly dated, though nice-looking table. In fact, if it was as old as I thought it might be, it was in great shape. I wasn't sure, but it looked like the table itself was faintly glowing, Suddenly, I heard something. I looked up and around, and after a moment, I focused on the sound. It seemed like a child calling out from somewhere upstairs. I turned around, but nothing was behind me. When I turned back, I gasped out loud when I saw the table had an entire meal laid out on it. I immediately smelled it all and saw the food that had not been there moments before. A hearty breakfast for a large family was on serving plates and had appeared from out of nowhere. I reached out instinctively to make sure what I was seeing was real. As I reached for a piece of bacon, I felt a sting on my hand, and it was swatted away by a woman. She had appeared in the seat at one of the heads of the table, and right next to me was the spectral hand of a young boy. The woman spoke.
Now, Billy, you have to wait for everyone.
I stepped aside to look at the small boy who had been standing in the same spot I had been. He smiled sheepishly at the woman.
Okay, Mom, but I'm so hungry, and it looks great.
The woman beamed at the boy and gestured for him to sit down at the table. In moments, I saw the ghostly procession of the rest of the family materialize in their respective seats, and I had to rub my eyes to make sure I wasn't dreaming or hallucinating the impossible sight. I watched on for a few minutes in shock and disbelief. I was captivated by the sight of the dining family who were there, or maybe not really there with me. Though the sight was incredible and I thought I might be going crazy, it did warm my heart to see the spirits of the family together. It made me think of the times when Susan, Danny, and I all sat down for Sunday breakfast. I wondered again if what she said could be real, and if she had really found him somewhere. Eventually, the group had finished their meal, and the mother brought out a fine-looking cake. She gave everyone a slice, and as everyone thanked her, I started to move away. As amazing as the spectacle was, I still had to find Susan. I snapped back around as I heard a terrible gasping sound, followed by a painful retching. The boy had vomited on the ground and started to cry. Before anyone could help him, the others began to vomit as well. The acrid smell was tinged with blood, and the entire family, save the mother, was all writhing on the ground and screaming. She stood, impassively watching the rest of them. She gazed down at the husband who was trying to pull himself upright. He stared back at her with a desperate, pleading look. She finally spoke to him in a terrifyingly icy tone.
It's better this way. We can all leave together. We can still have the memory of our family when we were happy in this one moment. Too much corruption, too many lies. We swore to stay together, our whole family. You ruined it. You destroyed this family, not me. If we can't go on together, then none of us will go on. Please understand, my babies. Please understand.
She looked away and began crying as the others writhed and died. I almost screamed, and the woman ate the last piece of cake herself. She began retching blood, and my legs almost buckled, witnessing the horrific sight. I started to flee the awful scene. Then, to my horror, the dying specter locked eyes with me. She pointed at me and screamed,
You are just like him! I pity your wife! It's better if you die here now! You will only disappoint her. Both of them will be better off without you. Your memory ends here. You will never leave this place alive.
She grabbed the knife she had cut the cake with and charged at me. The immediate danger knocked me out of my terrified daze, and I ran back to the door I had come from and managed to get through and slammed it shut. I thought I was safe, but the tip of a knife narrowly missed my head as it stabbed through the door and was lodged into the frame. I gasped and was about to fall back, but I lowered my body and kept pressure on the door as it was shaken by the horrible spirit's attempt at reaching me. Eventually, the struggling died down, and the screams of rage gave way to a new round of gagging and vomiting. There was a short gasp of air followed by silence. I knew then the dead thing had finally died once more. The whole scene had shaken me. I didn't believe in the supernatural, but I had no choice but to acknowledge it then and there. There was no other way to digest what had happened. I had seen some twisted reenactment of a horrible tragedy that had occurred decades ago. But the worst part was that after it was over, the spirit regarded me. I was desperate and horrified about how that thing knew about my wife. I had no idea what twisted game was being played here by these murderous spirits and how the owner, Bishop, was involved. But I needed to find Susan and get out of this madhouse more than ever. While I was recovering, I heard my phone buzz and I saw I had another missed message from Susan.
We were so happy. It was all I wanted. But it was taken away. He was taken away. What if we could be together again? What would you sacrifice?
My hands were shaking, and I let out a breath I didn't realize I had been holding on to. My mind reeled with the impossible implications of her message. Had she really found our son? How could he be back? And more importantly, what was she planning to do? I had to find out. I tried sending a response, but nothing happened, and I resolved to keep looking for her. I tried finding another door to get out of the identical-looking aisles of antiques I had been walking through, but I couldn't. It was strange. I knew I was not too far from the entrance, yet when I walked back, I found nothing, just more rows of dusty objects. The entire place was an impossibility, but I moved on, desperate to find my wife and perhaps see if she had really found our son. Eventually, I came upon another door. I went inside, and this time I found another weird set-like room. It appeared to be a butler's quarters. I moved inside and found a small pedestal with a strange-looking bell on it. It had another placard that read, "Last Call for Dignity." The thing gave off the same disturbing aura that the table in the previous room had, and I decided to keep my distance. Unfortunately, bad luck had other ideas. As I was walking past it, my leg bumped into an object sticking out in the aisle. The event started a reaction that led to various objects falling off a nearby bookshelf. One of the books struck the small silver bell as it fell. The contact caused a strange aura of light to form around the bell. Then the sound of the bell rang out, and I tensed up, waiting for something to happen. The sound was pleasant at first, but then I felt a terrible iciness in the air. I knew I was not alone again. I heard a voice call out,
"Sir, may I help you?"
I saw that a well-dressed man was waiting at attention as I turned around. He was holding a polished silver tray and appeared to be some sort of butler. I was startled into silence and couldn't think of what to say to another spirit who had just appeared right before my eyes. I was about to respond, but I saw that once again, another figure had shown up in the room. He was an ancient-looking man who looked half dead. He spoke up with an angry rasp that startled me, considering how wizened and decrepit he looked.
"Simon, you're late. When I ring the bell, you ought to be here in no less than 15 seconds. If it happens again, I am docking your pay. Understood?"
The butler nodded his head, not showing any offense to the indignity of his master. The old man continued,
I need you to fix the maintenance elevator this evening as well. Those hacks who I brought in for an estimate suggested it would be nearly $600 to repair. Can you believe it?
The butler had tried to respond.
But sir, I am afraid I lack the relevant skills to repair an elevator.
But he was cut off by an angry tirade from the old man again.
Damn it, Simon! You are going to lack a job if you do not fix that elevator. I don't care how you do it. Just do it!
There was a slight wince of anger on the stoic butler's face, but he nodded his head and proceeded down the hall I had just come from. To my surprise, the hall had changed and now led towards what looked like a busted-up elevator. The door opened and closed with a loud metallic snap, and I swear I saw it bobbing up and down. I didn't like the implications of what was happening, but I couldn't leave. The only way back was leaving via the death trap of an elevator. I suppressed my fear and followed the trail of the butler toward the door. I heard what sounded like heavy tools being used inside the elevator. I stole a peek inside and he was repairing something inside the lift. Then a bell rang from down the hall and the butler, Simon, as I heard his name was, looked up. He called down the hall to his boss.
Sir, I am afraid I am occupied. I have to finish this or the elevator might malfunction.
There was an angry shouting down the hall and Simon sighed, put down his tools and tried to pull the door open. He had managed to get about halfway out of the door when a snapping sound rang out. There was a moment of panic and disbelief in his eyes before the elevator plummeted down from where it had been. And to my horror, Simon was cut in half. He barely let loose a cry, and in the moments of gasping and bleeding, the angry ringing of a bell sounded from down the hall. The butler pulled himself along, even though he had been cut in two. He used his arms to drag his torso along the floor towards the maddening ringing of the bell. I was too shocked to follow. I just watched in disbelief as the bisected man slowly and implacably moved towards the sound of the bell. Then I heard voices.
Simon, that was far more than 15 seconds. What happened? Is the elevator...
Then a scream and a thumping sound were heard, followed by silence. I tried to ignore the horrible implications and turned back to the elevator. It had crashed and I was unsure of what to do at that point. I went to the door and pressed the button to recall it. I knew it didn't make sense, but I hoped it would do something. To my surprise, it did. It started coming back up. And when I heard the bell of the elevator ring, a second ringing followed. I realized it was the small silver bell, and the frantic ringing I heard gave me an inexplicable chill. Then I looked down the hall and saw the figure on the floor, clutching the bell and covered in blood.
You don't belong here. Your memories, you cannot escape them. The dignity of work is not an excuse to leave them behind. It did not save me, and nothing can now. You should have left. Now we will consume you too.
The butler's body was covered in blood, and he had a deranged and manic look on his face. He pulled himself towards me, ringing the bell and screaming after me. I pressed my back to the wall and watched on as he inched closer, his insane shrieking getting louder. All the while he swung the silver bell wildly, its chiming ring jarring against his demonic ranting. Finally, the door to the elevator opened and I rushed inside. I pressed the button to close the door, and it slammed shut just in time to keep out the hideous apparition. I let out a panicked breath and fell back. I could not believe what was happening around me. This place had come alive with the awful memories of the past, and they were not content to stay buried. I was horrified to think about how many objects in the store might be hiding more of those terrible wraiths. I had to find Susan and escape this nightmare. As the elevator moved on, my phone buzzed. Still no service, but another message from Susan.
Do you think it hurts to die? What do you think he went through? What do you think will happen to us? Wouldn't it be better to have some say in how it ends?
I was shaken by the fatalistic message and prayed I could find her before anything happened. I got off the elevator and found myself on another floor that looked different than the previous areas. The entire hall felt like it was right out of a Gothic Victorian manor. The detail on the walls, the furniture, and of course the rows of antiques was impeccable, and I admired it for a while, despite my previous terror. I didn't linger long as I feared what might be lying in wait on this level. As I crept through the brooding shadows, it was disturbing to see that little natural light came in through the high-paned windows. The area seemed impossible. I had no idea how it could be within the same store. I supposed it was nothing compared to the things I had seen earlier. I kept walking until I came across an open door. I approached cautiously, not knowing what might be within, but hoping for some escape back to the lower level. I heard voices from within, and I slowed down to listen as best I could.
She is a harlot. She will never make a proper wife to Chauncey. And if you do not do something now, she will take him away, along with the riches his estate promises.
The voice of an elderly lady, nearly spitting the words, rang out. A softer voice spoke up, answering the first.
I know, Mother, I know, but I do not know what to do. Rebecca has always been prettier than me. Maybe I can find another suitor.
A slap was heard, and a pained exclamation. Then soft crying, and the sound stopped. I edged closer to the door, enough to peek around the corner, and saw that no one was in there. I started to step inside, but the door slammed shut, and I heard the voices again.
I did it, Mother. I did it. But she hurt me. She did this to me. And when I told Chauncey, he did not want me. I don't know what to do now. What do I do?
Soft crying was heard, followed by the disdainful voice of the mother speaking again.
Idiot girl, you have ruined our chances with him. And now you will be lucky to find a merchant who would take you in this condition. I can barely stand to look at you myself.
The soft crying slowly faded, followed by a slight giggle, and then a tirade of fitful laughter. The older woman raised her voice again.
Be quiet and let me think.
Then a scream was heard from the older woman, and the maniacal laughter of the younger woman continued through the sound of tearing flesh and the flush of running blood. The violent outburst was over, and the voices faded once again. I tried to steady my breathing and forced myself to step inside. It looked like a woman's bedroom. A similar type of austere room that a prominent lady might have had in the 1800s. I was glad the spectral discourse was over, but was dismayed when I saw there was no way out of the room. As I turned around, I saw the door had closed behind me. I swallowed hard as I heard a voice again. It was the softer voice. She spoke out, asking a question.
Do you think I'm still pretty? My mother always said the gleam in my eyes was something she was proud of. Even though it's gone, just like she is. What do you think?
I waited for a painful moment as I realized she was not talking to another spirit. She was addressing me. Slowly, I turned around and saw a slim, shorter woman with her back turned to me, facing a vanity with a brilliant silver-framed mirror. She was wearing a beautiful dress that looked expensive and had the full regalia of someone who was going to a social event.
Well, I asked you a question. Are you not the new servant here to clean the room?
I stepped forward, and she turned to face me. She was admittedly beautiful, light auburn hair cascading down her shoulders, and my eyes fixated on her stunning appearance. Full lips, dazzling emerald eyes entrapped me. I was speechless for a moment, and she giggled.
It's not polite to stare. I said you could look, not stare. Why are you here? Your clothes are strange.
I couldn't think of a response besides managing.
I am looking for my wife.
The beautiful smile faded, and she glowered at me.
Oh, are you taken as well, then? Even my affections for the help are rebuffed.
She started to laugh, then began crying, then sobbing. I was scared, but felt sympathy in that moment, and I tried to touch her shoulder to reassure her. But before I could, she vanished. In the blink of an eye, the room changed. The decorations were smashed, the walls defaced, the furniture was broken. Everything was destroyed in the room, except the brilliant silver mirror. It was the only surface that had not been ruined. I should have left, but something compelled me to step towards it. Maybe morbid fascination. I saw another placard by the mirror that read, "Beauty is in the eye of the beholder." I inched close enough to see in the mirror and saw a shifting, rippling surface. The frame appeared to have the familiar ethereal glow that the other objects gave off while a spirit was present. I focused again on the center of the mirror and looked closer. Instead of my own face reflected at me, I saw a room that looked like the one I had been in earlier. Then I heard her again.
A shame you came here uninvited, but not for me. Maybe I will take her after I take you. I'm sure she must be pretty. For now, though tonight you shall be my feast, I will save your eyes for last.
My blood froze, and suddenly I saw the woman's face staring back at me from the mirror. Her lips were torn and bleeding, curled in a hideous snarl. There were deep cuts and gouges in her skin all over her face. Worst of all, her eyes were gone. All that were left were black pits that seemed to burn with an unholy fire. I felt her hands reaching for me through the mirror, and I fell back and landed hard on my side. I watched in mind-numbing terror as the eyeless nightmare stepped out of the mirror and into the room, hands grasping at empty air, ruined face twitching as she used her other senses to pursue me. I managed to dodge her stumbling advance, but I knocked into some fallen debris and she shrieked and lunged at the sound I had made. I crawled along the floor, trying to stay as quiet as possible. I heard her speak again, her soft, pretty voice, now distorted in an unearthly tone.
Aren't I beautiful? Tell me I'm beautiful like her.
I slid along the floor in panic desperation and got to the door. I pulled hard, but it did not open. The fiend staggered towards me, arms outstretched as if feeling the air for my presence. I had to act fast. I stood up, stepped back, and thrust my foot into the door. The first kick sent a jolt of pain through my leg, but I heard the door crack. Then another hard kick managed to knock it open. I fled just as her hands grasped the place where I had been, and I rushed down the hall and away from the eyeless ghoul masquerading as a beautiful woman. I kept running until I thought I had put enough distance between us. I heard no pursuit, and collapsed onto the floor. I heard a notification and was not surprised to see another message from Susan.
It's beautiful, this place. I know it can't be real, can it? He is here. Now you are here as well. Can we truly be together again? Please hurry. Come home.
I was emotionally overwhelmed by the message, then physically overwhelmed. A feeling of displacement washed over me, as if the entire building had shifted. I nearly blacked out from the sensation, and when my eyes opened again, I found myself in a different hall. I walked towards the light in the doorway at the end and stepped inside. I took in my surroundings, and I nearly dropped to my knees when I recognized where I was. It was our home, down to the last detail. It was as if I had just walked in the front door and looked around to see the entry hall. The walls all around were still hanging our family pictures. The memories came rushing back in a surge of emotion that threatened to overwhelm me. I just could not believe it was all here. I moved closer to inspect the pictures and saw him. Danny was in all the pictures, many of which I don't even remember taking. Like the wall was showing me pictures of the times we spent together, rather than just the moments we remembered to capture. I couldn't believe what I was seeing. This place, somehow it was getting into my head, reading my thoughts, or perhaps my memories. It wanted to show me something, or maybe someone. I heard a voice I recognized as Susan's and ran upstairs. I turned left and saw the door at the end of the hall that looked just like our son's room at home. I could barely breathe when I heard her whispering and the voice of our son responding. It couldn't be real. He couldn't really be here. He was gone. He had died, and we buried him. Yet I heard his melodic voice, giggling as his mother read him his favorite book, like they always did at bedtime. I was overcome by a desperate hope that led me forward. He was back. Somehow he was back. This place brought him back to us. I slowly opened the door and saw. The room looked exactly like it had years ago, before we packed it all away, before we said goodbye. And on his bed, sitting cross-legged, was our son. I wept quietly to myself before getting any closer. I had not been prepared for this, but a terrible feeling in my gut told me that this was wrong. It couldn't be happening. I remembered the other spirits I had seen so far, and I was horrified that my son might be some simulacrum designed to lure us in and trap us. But when I heard his voice, heard the way he acted near his mother, my fear lessened, and I moved closer despite myself, clinging to hope that somehow it had been a miracle, and he was returned to us.
Danny? Susan? I managed to speak out.
Daddy!
Danny jumped off the bed and he ran up to me and gave me a hug. I hugged him back, unable to hold back more tears, and I felt reunited with a part of my heart that had been lost. Susan was crying as she came over to us, and we all embraced. We sat there for a while in that impossible moment. My family had been reunited, and despite all the horrors I had seen earlier that night, I felt at peace. Danny looked at both of us and asked,
"Can we stay together now? I missed you. I don't want to leave again. We can be together here if you'll stay. Please?"
Susan hugged him again.
"Of course, Danny. I will never let you go again."
I noticed a strange flashing light near Susan's pockets and an odd shift in the pressure of the room. I saw that she had the bracelet that Daniel had made for her on Mother's Day the year he died. It was glowing faintly, and I had no idea how or why. Then I looked at Danny and saw he had a similar, almost imperceptible glow. I tried to focus on the strange light and noticed that Susan was starting to glow as well. She had a faint blue aura that was getting progressively dimmer as she held on to our son. Something was not right. There had to be a reason he could be here with all these other malevolent spirits that had attacked me earlier. Why was he here? How had this place known about him unless... I suddenly considered the bracelet and then the other objects that had been brought to this antique shop. I thought about how these things had tethered the spirits of the lost to them, or something else had clung on to them. I had to see what was really happening. A terrible thought entered my mind, and I resolved to test my grim theory. I cleared my mind and forced a thought into my head, then spoke.
Hey, Danny, is your scooter here? I would love to push you on it one more time.
I smiled at him, and Susan looked confused. Then Daniel paused for a moment and jumped up with glee.
Yeah, it's right here in my closet. Come on, Dad.
He rushed to the closet door in his room and reached inside, rummaging around. I cleared my mind of my plan and thought hard on a single word. Green. Sure enough, Danny pulled out a green scooter from the closet and brought it to me, smiling with a face that looked exactly like how I remembered my son. Susan looked confused, but brushed it off, mentioning offhand that she did not remember a scooter, but was happy that Danny and I would be playing together. My heart sank, because what she did not know was that there was no scooter. I had thought it up just now, just like I had its color. Something in this place was looking inside us, looking into our memories and our thoughts, creating things out of the fabric of our own minds. I considered the shop, precious memories, the antiques, each with a memory and a spirit, as Bishop had said, how each spirit had tried to keep us and force us to stay, and worst of all, how that bracelet that my son had made for my wife glowed with that same terrible light that the other items had, moments before the malevolent entities had been unleashed. I smiled sadly at Danny and tried one last time.
I'm so happy you're with us again. Now that you're back, we can go home and be together again. Let's go.
He looked confused and then shrugged.
But we are home, Daddy. Just look around. You, me, and Mommy are here together. That's what matters. That's what you both wanted. We can stay here now, together.
Susan nodded her head. I looked at her with concern plain on my face. I didn't know if she remembered that we were not in fact at home. We were in some bizarre antique store in the middle of a storm. Or worse. Maybe she knew, but did not care. Suddenly, I saw the shadow of another person in the room, looming behind us. Turning around, I was greeted with the sight of Bishop, the owner, smiling at us all and clasping his hands together.
Well, I see you found what you were looking for after all. I am so glad you will be joining us. The more, the merrier. The more of you, the more for us.
He paused as if tasting the air.
The stronger we become. Will you stay with us and live in this perfect and precious memory forever?
I considered his words and the other things I had seen. I was about to respond when, to my horror, Susan spoke first.
Yes, I will. I am never going to leave you again, Danny.
She bent down and hugged him, and I saw the dim aura around her change once again. I looked to them, unable to articulate just what was wrong without sounding crazy. All I was able to blurt out was,
"Susan, wait! No!"
Mr. Bishop smiled and clapped his hands together.
"Now your memories, your souls will join us. Keep us all going a while longer. Your sweet, precious memories will never die, and neither will you or your son."
The wide rictus grin that spread across his face was ghastly, and I knew that this pact had a dark and terrible cost. I grabbed my wife's hand and she looked at me. I tried to warn her about the terrible suspicion I had.
"Susan, I don't think it's really him. This memory, spirit, or echo of a memory. It's not Danny. Not really. It can only show us our memory of him and act accordingly. All of this,"
I gestured around the recreation of our house,
"was put here to make us believe we were home. But you and I both know that we aren't. This is a trap."
Susan looked at me and held up a hand. For a moment, I thought she might listen, but the hopeless gleam in her eye when she looked at Danny and back to me made me understand. She finally responded,
"Our memories make us who we are. Our boy is here with us. I cannot lose him again. I won't. Please forgive me."
I was in shock at her decision. I held out my arms to reach for her.
"No, no, you can't go. You can't leave too. Please!"
But before I could beg her to reconsider, something happened. The entire foundation of the building shook, and Mr. Bishop looked at me and then at Susan and Danny.
"Well, it seems like your wife has made her choice. Surely you won't leave them both?"
He started to chuckle, and I saw the hint of a malicious gleam in his eyes. It looked demonic in that moment. The rumbling intensified, and not knowing what else to do, I charged the man and tried to tackle him to the ground. I wanted to force him to let us all leave together. But when I lunged at him, I passed right through him and crashed into the wall by the door. Bishop chuckled again and looked at the small brass pocket watch attached to his suit.
"Oh dear, it looks like you made your choice. I did try to warn you. Well, now I'm afraid you must leave. It's nearly dawn. Since you're not ready to stay, you should be off. If you don't go now, you might get stuck with the others on your way out."
He sighed almost apologetically.
"I must also depart. Good luck. And I'm sorry you won't be seeing us again. Not unless you truly wish to. Not unless you can't let go."
He vanished in a wisp of smoke, and to my horror, I saw Danny and Susan fading away as well. I reached for them, but they were intangible. I saw Danny vanish in his mother's arms. And in one last terrible moment, I think Susan finally realized that this was not her dream, but a prison of a memory she could not let go of. With one last hopeless effort, I reached out to her, and she reached out for me. I thought I heard her voice whisper as her form faded.
"I'm sorry. I love you. We will always be with you."
Then I was alone in a crumbling building. Part of me wanted to stay and be crushed along with everything else, but a base level of survival instinct kicked in. I was not ready to die that day. I stood up and broke into a desperate sprint, back down the halls, along the way that I prayed was to the exit. The place began falling apart. I managed to dodge fallen beams and collapsing sections of ceiling. I had no idea why everything was coming undone, but I had no time to consider it just then. I reached the door and hurled myself out just in time before the doorway itself collapsed. As soon as I hit the ground outside the store, I got the weird feeling of vertigo again. It was worse now. It felt like my eardrums might burst, and I knew I was going to be sick. My head hurt badly as well. I had not hit it, but it felt like something was happening in my mind very rapidly. When I was able to stand up and focus, I couldn't believe what I saw. The rain had stopped, and the dawn's light was peeking out, shining down on an empty building. There was no store anymore. The sign for Precious Memories was gone. The place where it stood, just another empty storefront. It felt like nothing had ever been there at all. There was no trace left of the impossible place that had taken my wife and my son. My wife was declared missing, and a search for her went out. I had no illusion that anyone would find her, but no one would believe that she had been taken by a vanishing antique store. Sure enough, in the aftermath, I tried to look up Precious Memories and found that no such store had ever existed in that location, or anywhere else in the state. And that is my story of what happened that fateful night. The reason why I'm still here. To this day, I think about the terrible memories every night before I go to sleep. I write everything down to try and remember clearly what happened. That place did something to my mind, and the effort to remember becomes more difficult by the day. I think about all the memories trapped in that labyrinth of spirits. I think about Susan and Danny, lost there together. Or were they ever really there at all? I don't remember anymore. All I know is that they are gone, and I am alone. Now in my isolation and despair, I cling to all of their possessions. They comfort me, remind me of a time when we were together. These things will never leave me, but I know it's not the same. I just wish I could see her one more time. I wish I could see them both. The real them. I feel like I made a terrible mistake. I should have stayed. Added my spirit to the memory. At least then we could still be together. I've tried to accept the horrible fate I've been dealt. I've tried to let go. To remind myself that Danny and Susan would not want me to be miserable. I considered how happy they looked together, even if he was an echo. Their bond was real. I've spent the last 5 years trying to accept what happened, but I don't know if I ever can. And recently, I've had vivid dreams about that place. Dreams that speak to me and remind me that precious memories can be made real. The dreams have given me clarity. And now I know what I have to do. I remember Bishop's parting words to me about how I would never see them again unless I really wanted to. I wanted to every day since then, but I never did. Now I realize what I must do to see them again. I remember the price of a precious memory. I'm taking another holiday to Echo Cove tonight. This time, I have an antique of my own. I smile while I grip my wife's ring tightly. I drive out there again. It's dark and the weather turns bad. The storm whips up, but I smile. Indeed, it's a good sign. I know it will be there. I just have to hold on to the memory. I drive up to a familiar empty lot and see a faint light in the distance. As I approach the door, my wife's ring glows faintly, and I hear voices whispering. I'm so happy I will get to see them again one last time. It will all be worth it. I will never leave them again. I will never leave this precious memory.
And that was Precious Memories by Red Bad Andy. A good reminder to process your trauma, or your trauma might end up processing you. A little about the author. Andrew Richardson, a.k.a. Red Bad Andy, has been writing short horror fiction for about 2 years now, mostly for the No Sleep and Scary Stories Reddit pages. He's an eternal fan of all things horror, movies, video games, literature, and of course, Chilling Tales. He worked at a Blockbuster Video for almost 10 years and has compiled more movie trivia than he knows what to do with. Me too, Andy. Me too. He's got a book called A Glimpse into Nightmares, available now on Amazon, and a novel on the way as well. Check the show notes for a link. We'd love you to grab a copy. If your pants are too tight to get your wallet out, though, most of his work is available to read on his Reddit at www.reddit.com/user/badandytheRed. Most notable about Andrew, though, is he's now an award-winning author, Drew Blood's Dark Tales Spooky Season 2025 Writing Contest champion. That's right, it counts. I only wish Craig had made the name of the contest a little longer, though. By the time you tell people your credits, they're ready for a nap. I mean, come on, Craig. How about the GFY contest or something? You can't even fit that on one of those wrestling belts. Anyway, Andrew lives in Washington with his family and a crazy assortment of pets, including cats, dogs, ducks, chickens, tarantulas, and bunnies. And no doubt a few tarantula bunnies. Ooh. Anyway, thanks, Andrew, and congratulations once again, my friend. And another big thank you and congratulations to our runners-up. Hey, y'all keep an eye on those emails. You never know when one might pop up from me. Or actually, my main man, Jeff. He's basically the wizard behind the curtain.
And do old Drew Blood a favor, would you? Subscribe to his podcast wherever you do your listening and leave him a 5-star review and a kind word, even if you're listening on YouTube. He needs soldiers on all fronts to win this battle, and he appreciates it. To hear a premium ad-free edition of tonight's and all the other episodes, visit SimplyScaryPodcast.com today and click Patrons in the upper menu. You'll find yourself at ChillingTalesForDarkNights.com, where you can become a patron for as little as $5 per month and get access to their entire audio archive, all ad-free and available to download or stream. Thank you for your time and for supporting our sponsors. When you support our sponsors, you support this show. If you happen to use Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, or YouTube, you can follow and subscribe to Chilling Tales for Dark Nights there, where you'll get all the latest updates and new releases and have the chance to interact with them each and every week. Oh, and you can find Drew Blood on Facebook and Instagram, and sometimes Twitter. The Drew Blood's Dark Tales podcast is accepting submissions, friend. If you've got a story or two you'd like to be featured on the show, send it to drewbloodhorror@gmail.com. If selected, you'll get the full treatment. 10 bananas.
Well, I'm afraid this is where we part ways, at least till next week. So grab a drink for the road and go pound the pavement, will you? And if you don't feel like doing the legwork, all those kids that came to your door, they've got big bags of candy with them. Just sit back and let the treats come to you. So may the wind be at your back, and may the road rise up to meet you. A big happy Halloween to all my dear friends out there. And naturally, go fuck yourselves. Oh, this was fun. Good night, y'all. Please be safe out there.